Brought to you thanks to Suaco and AGD Systems. This is Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
We're already halfway through this huge event in Amsterdam, but with so much going on at Intertraffic 2024, there's so much more to see. So let's try to get round some more speakers and exhibitors here on Highways Voices, brought to you with Suaco and AGD Systems.
Sponsored by Suaco and AGD Systems, Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
So you probably noticed on Tuesday on the Highways News website, we carried a story of the announcement here at Intertraffic that traffic technology companies Suaco and Monoch have announced a new initiative to expand cooperative, connected and automated mobility services to large-scale deployment. They say this initiative promises to provide cities and road authorities worldwide with an easier and less complex approach to CCAM thanks to plug-and-play solution packages designed to foster safer, greener, more inclusive and efficient mobility. So let's find out more about this important new partnership by hearing from both companies. So I'm joined by Monoch's CEO Menno Mulder and Christoph Stürgerer, who is Vice President Products and Solutions at ITS at Suaco. So Christoph, first of all, what does Suaco gain by partnering with Monoch?
What we gain is we can build on our joint industry expertise and experience that we are utilizing our installed base, also our domain expertise, but also the competence of Monoch when it comes to real-time message brokering and exchange. And we bring this together in a joint solution called MyCity Connect that we are start bringing to the market in Finland as a first use case.
Okay, so what does it do? If I explain it to me as though I'm a city transport manager, transport planner, what does the partnership actually mean for me if I use the product?
First of all, you can use the basic services of the product to find out what the benefits are, how well your infrastructure, your prognosis is working. So the quality of the prognosis, for instance, is a part that is incorporated in the basic service. And it also helps us and the city to engage with a real-life use case to better understand how can we advance our offering going forward.
Okay, so let's bring in Menno from Monoch, based here in the Netherlands. Menno, you're known for talking traffic. You've been extremely successful over here. I know that there's a lot of interest in the Department for Transport about the product coming to the UK. What does Suaco bring to your offering?
Well, I think many things that Suaco puts into this partnership. Of course, the geographical coverage and the reach of Suaco is important. But I think even more important is that we take away a number of obstacles for the authorities. So things like having topology files, having the right interfacing, having interoperability. All these things have historically been a hurdle for authorities to move from pilots to large-scale deployments. Now, together, we take away these barriers. So I think that's actually more important thing than even the reach of the Suaco organization. And then the last thing that I want to say is also having the guts to do this and showing a way forward to the market is also something that I think is a key benefit of this partnership. And it shows this boldness from Suaco and his commitment to really make this transition happen.
Christoph mentioned that it's a here and now. This isn't a proof of concept. It's being done in Finland. If we went to see what's actually being implemented, what would we see as the here and now in Finland?
We started with a number of solution packages, which also include a complementary package that contains a number of these prerequisites, so like the interfacing, the topology file, but also some basic dashboards about quality that Christoph mentioned. And then we have other use case-oriented packages that are paid packages, such as holistic way, seek and priority, traffic light forecasting, virtual loops, and also what we call an advanced digital twin, which gives read tons of statistics about the performance of an intersection. These use cases are there, and they are there for the taking, but as you said correctly, we start in Finland and then we will roll out into Europe in a later stage.
Okay, and Christoph, what happens next if you want to get involved?
If you would like to get involved, you best reach out to Manuel or myself or to our representatives who are working on the product in detail. And then we are happy to engage and have a first presentation and see how we take it from there.
Fabulous. Menno and Christoph, thank you very much for your time. And it's great to see a real live solution that's being announced here at Intertraffic. Thank you.
Thank you.
From Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024, Highways Voices.
Next up on Highways Voices, let's talk to another expert in autonomous vehicles from California. We've spoke to Randy Iwazaki, who used to be at Contra Costa County yesterday on the program. Today, let's talk to Billy Riggs. He's a professor in autonomous transport at the University of San Francisco. And I think it's fair to say San Francisco is the city where it's happening more than anywhere else on the planet when it comes to autonomy. Where do you think the shared mobility, kind of what we would call driverless pod solution, is at the moment, and how is that affecting the take up and the ridership of across the whole of public transportation?
Well, the data that we have right now shows that pretty clearly that dedicated transit riders stick with transit because it's still more efficient at making many everyday trips. That whether or not you get in a Waymo or a Cruise or a rideshare vehicle or you drive your own car, that drive is still going to be a little longer for some trips, even than actually taking the bus or a train. It's also going to be less efficient from a environmental standpoint as well as a parking standpoint. It's going to be really expensive. So I think we're seeing, by and large, that those passengers aren't the customers that Cruise and Waymo are getting. The passengers primarily we're seeing a pivot between traditional rideshare or traditional ride pool and those level 4 automation companies. So people going from traditional rideshare like Uber to actually taking a Waymo. What's interesting is to whether or not Uber and Lyft and the ride-sharing companies start to have partnerships where they are managing the front end of the autonomous ride. And we're already starting to see that with Uber kind of collapsing its product in certain market and allowing for Waymo rides, for example. And that's happening in Arizona as well as Los Angeles.
And your session was lessons learned when it comes to robo-taxis and shuttles. Summarize as best you can what the lessons have been learned.
The implications for public transit agencies in terms of reducing ridership is not as significant as I think some people feared. And yet the opportunity it presents to bring new riders and provide the last mile solution, very clearly it could fill in gaps in the network. There's also an opportunity to really think about reframing the physical environment in terms of pickup and drop off. One of the critical things and points of tension we see is increased rideshare behavior and therefore increased tension and competition for the curb. Increased competition for what traditionally has been a quote unquote transit pickup and drop off space. And if we're reframing the idea of what is transit for that last portion of or that first portion of a trip, then really something we have to think about is how we better transact at the origin and the destination at the start and the beginning of that trip. And usually that's at a curb in an urban condition. And so there's a lot of lessons in terms of how we manage data, but also space availability at the curbs, and a lot of opportunity still for invention. There is one thing that is really important. It's that when we think about the future of automation, it doesn't mean that you stop planning the street right-of-way for bicycles, pedestrians, and transit. And so a lot of people think, well, we should just, how does that relate to how we're planning for multimodal mobility? And if anything, I think automated vehicles suggest that we need to move into a future of planning cities for people and also planning more car-free areas that actually can facilitate carbon-less or carbon-light travel, where automated vehicles can fill in the gaps and maybe help the cost-effectiveness of public transit and support high-capacity transit routes. But at the end of the day, it doesn't mean that you shortcut or you stop actually emphasizing primary walking and cycling trips.
Final question. You live in the Bay Area.
I do.
How often do you use either a Waymo or a Cruise?
Yeah, it's funny, Paul, if we were in the Bay Area and you said, let's go for a Cruise ride, I would say, or let's go for a Waymo, I would say, you know, let's meet at this bar and we'll go for a ride. And you would see me walking up and I had just been gotten off the bus. So I would say about 5% of the time I'll use a Waymo or a Cruise. So 95% of the time I'm actually taking transit because it's more efficient. And for me at least, I have the luxury of living in a high density transit area. That's a luxury that not everyone has, and that's something that I know, being a person of privilege, that I have the privilege of public transit access. Certain people in my own city don't have that access, and so I see a lot of opportunity for reaching populations that have been marginalized, places in the city that have been underinvested in transit infrastructure. I see that as a huge opportunity for enriching the transit density of areas that have been underinvested in and giving them the same opportunity to connect it to rail that I have. And so that's really some of the promise of automation that I hope for.
Thanks very much for your time.
All right.
From Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024, Highways Voices.
So I've come to the Clearview Intelligence stand where it's party time. Clearview Intelligence is 50 years old this year and the party kicks off here at Intertraffic, and I've been joined by Managing Director Nick Lanigan. Nick, happy birthday.
Well, thank you very much. It's a very proud moment for us. 50 years is a long time in business, and I think for us it's almost a celebration to the formation of a new brand with Clearview Intelligence. If you remember, the business 50 years ago started as Golden River Traffic, which I'm sure a lot of people in the industry remember. Latterly, we formed Clearview Traffic with a business called Astutia back in 2003, and then later it became Clearview Intelligence around 2017. And I think since then, the business moved on significantly, gone through a lot of changes, but I'm really proud to say, having been in the business myself for 20 years, you know, to see it be here today, to celebrate with all our industry peers and colleagues, is a fantastic moment.
And it's interesting, Nick, because when you say 50 years is a long time in business, and it is, because usually you see, you know, companies going by the wayside or being swallowed up by much bigger companies. Clearview's kind of got itself its niche area. You're a good, solid, medium-sized company delivering some really special products that really make a difference.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, we've seen a lot of our competitors over the last 5 to 10 years when there's been a very active M&A culture in the industry. But I think, you know, the secret of our success is we've always continued to innovate. We've never stood still. You know, we recognise that the market is shifting, both technology life cycles are getting shorter, and I think it's clear we've always managed to stay ahead of the curve and remain a very innovative business, delivering solutions not just for today but for the future, and I think that's been absolutely key.
And it's interesting, in the background there's a shot of your intelligent road studs that switch on and off. Your active road studs, the solar powered ones that are extremely sustainable, they're kind of the thing that you're known for. But in fact, Clearview has gone into so many different hardware and software solutions.
Oh yeah, no question. I mean, the road studs, the active road studs, have been around now for 15, 20 years. But I think it's now the time is right for that solution, with the drive for net zero and decarbonisation and the reduction in infrastructure. So we're really confident that's going to come into its own over the next couple of years. I think outside of that, we had to evolve the business. We recognise that the key is intelligence, hence Clearview Intelligence. So a lot of the stuff that we've done is now built around our insight mobility platform where we're taking multiple data sets to provide solutions to National Highways, local authorities and Transport Scotland. And, you know, that's really, having that multifaceted business has been one of the real secrets to our success.
And you've mentioned a lot of UK business there. What about internationally? You're here at Intertraffic, the world's biggest highway show, really. How are you expanding beyond the shores of Great Britain?
Well, we've had a strong international channel now for 15, 20 years with partners who've worked with us and developed products with us. But we felt now was the time, with some of the new and exciting stuff we're doing, to really try and reinvigorate that. And as we all know, the world's a big place. And although we've got a strong channel, the opportunity for growth with the solution that we've developed, I think, is significant. So this is the first time we've exhibited for, I think, now 10 years. We often have come as a delegate and, you know, come done all the usual things, met partners, but we really wanted to make a statement this time round by having a stand. You can see the impact of it, and it's, you know, so far it's been a fantastic show for us.
I was going to say, has it worked?
I'm looking forward to going back and sharing all the good news with the rest of the guys in the business and the board as well. Yeah, I think, all right, we're only halfway through, but if the first half of the week's anything to go by, you know, it's going to be a really success story for us.
Nick, I've taken you away from the party. I'll let you go and rejoin it, and I'll catch up with you soon. Thank you.
Oh, thank you very much.
Brought to you thanks to Suarco and AGD Systems. This is Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024.
These special Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam 2024 are brought to you thanks to the generous support of Suarco and AGD Systems. And I've come back to the AGD Systems stand today in Hall 5, but I want to talk collaboration. So I've been joined by Jim Sheehan, who's Managing Director of Canadian company Northline, and Dean Jarvis, who's a commercial engineer at AGD Systems. So Jim and Dean, thank you for joining me on Highways Voices. Jim, let's start with you. You operate in Canada, as I said, and you've been working with AGD Systems for about 20 years now.
Yeah, just over 20 years. We're a multi-generational company, going from father to daughter back in 2017. And Bernie Timothy, who founded the company, he actually started the relationship with Pete Sr. Way back in the day. So yeah, we've been dealing with them for a very, very long time.
And why?
Really comes down to quality of product and relationship. One of the interesting things about AGD is their engineering background. It's not just a sales organization. They're actually run by engineers. So we know when the product comes out, the product comes out. It takes sometimes a bit of time to get it, but we know it's right when we get it done.
When you say that you get it, do you have any influence on what the engineers are producing, or are you just happy to take the product as is?
Oh, no, absolutely. Not only do we get influence, they ask us our opinion on what's going on and how they can better service our market, which has happened in two different products. One, the 331, quite recently, we did a revisit of it with them, and they redesigned aspects of it to get us a low speed threshold, lower power. All that was bespoke design for us, for our need in our market in Canada.
And let me understand this, because I genuinely don't know. Are there different rules on any data collection, or are there any other sort of differences in Canada, or does it all work out of a box the same whether it's in the UK, Canada, or somewhere else?
When it comes to a speed sign, something like that, very simple, it's out of the box. But when it comes to the more granular things that the ministry and the different levels of government want, it's very centric to the North American market. We have to do AADT counts as a legal requirement in all of our counties and municipalities. When it comes to traffic management, again, it's very unique. The standards are not the same in the UK and Europe as they are in Canada. So AGD has been very, very adaptive to make sure that they meet those standards, and they're making the investment. So it's not just a case of saying, hey, we've got this really good piece of kit, try and sell it. They turn around, they get it NEMA certified for us. That costs tens of thousands of dollars for it. They get FC regulation certification, they get IC certification, all the things that allow us to sell the product effectively and prove its quality in the North American marketplace.
Dean, your head must be swelling as you listen to all of this. As a company that is tucked away in the West Country, how do you support international clients?
I think the biggest thing is actually reaching out and talking to them. I really enjoy my telephone conversations, not just with Jim, but with customers all around the world.
AGD has its own Australian company, and I've interviewed them in the past, but where else are you active?
pretty much globally. Obviously, we're looking to support our Australian office at the ITS World Congress later on this year. Similarly, we've just recently come back from Qatar, and we were involved in a massive deployment there as part of the FIFA World Cup Corridor Scheme.
Okay, and Jim, I'm interested in any particular projects that you're particularly proud of that you've actually implemented with AGD in Canada.
We have a couple, but can I just tell you a quick story about Dean? Right. And it won't be an embarrassing one, I promise. We did an installation, our first off one in Nova Scotia for the 343 radar. When we did it, Dean trained me on it. I went out there and I was doing it on my own. Technical glitch on my part, we'll call it a user problem. Your viewers can't see, I'm pointing at myself. But we have a bit of a time difference between the two of us. And this was a Friday night. I was finishing off the install and I just couldn't get it working. Email Dean, knowing I'm probably not going to get it. He's at home, he gets online, and he spends the next 2.5 hours troubleshooting to make sure that it's working the way it's spec to do before I had to turn it over to the customer. So that's some of the stuff we get from AGD.
I think, Dean, the phrase is picnic, which is problem in chair, not in computer. Yeah. But anyway, we'll move on. Tell me about the projects you're doing then, Jim.
We have some really unique projects right now. We're actually doing projects from coast to coast in Nova Scotia as well as in British Columbia, and just in Brandon last week, and we've got another project in Brandon for our 343 installations there. The most unique thing we do with AGD is the 331, which we call our Fox. We integrate it into our own data logging board with AGD, and now we promote that through community safety groups. So the RCMP use it really right across the country and allows them to identify hotspots in community safety zones, pedestrian areas, and then through unique reporting that we give them, they can very quickly see, is it an issue, yes or no? And if it's a no, they just present the information to the community groups. And if it is, then they can start looking at enforcement or education or other means to remediate that. And that's all through that technology.
So now, I've been to Brandon, and I'm surprised that you need to actually have that sort of level of data collection in kind of a one-horse town in the middle of Manitoba. But at the other end of the scale, you're based in Toronto, and I've worked there as well. And I've never seen so many stationary vehicles in one place as the highways around Toronto. So actually, I guess the technology is vital for actually trying to manage the traffic that is just clogged up all day, every day.
It is. But to your point, it's literally that type of diverse environment in North America. We go from that one horse town all the way up to 22 lanes of traffic in Toronto. And we need to come up with solutions to manage that effectively at both levels of the spectrum, which we're able to do right now. So that's great.
You're giving me shudders of nearly missing a flight, despite giving myself 4 hours to get to Toronto Airport once. We're out of time now, but it's been a real pleasure to meet you and to understand more collaborations internationally. So Jim from Northline, thanks ever so much for joining me. And again, Dean, thanks for AGD's support on Highways Voices this week.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Paul.
And before we go from the latest Highways Voices from here at Intertraffic Amsterdam, it wouldn't be right if we didn't catch up with a few more suggestions of things to go and listen to in the summit program, on top of spending time walking around the exhibition. So Kevin Boris is tasked with writing up some of these on behalf of the organisers this week, some of the must-attend sessions. And so what has been picked out for you at Intertraffic? Kevin?
Well, I've got three exciting things to go to on Thursday. The first one is 10:45, which is in Intertraffic Summit Theatre 1. Next Generation Network Adaptive Traffic Signal Control, I'll even say it, : Insights and Performance Results. That speaks for itself. But some good speakers. You've got Andy Hamilton from UNEX. You've got Sabina Krauser, also from UNEX. So that's, we're going to be looking at how it is largely a UNIX session, I must be honest, looking at U-Traffic Fusion and how the U-Traffic Fusion is leveraging multimodal data sources and advances in computational abilities to optimise signal control flexibly for all road users. The word flexibly is an important thing, that it's done with road users in mind. Not suggesting that other solutions haven't been, but you do often find, as we've discussed many times before, often products are solutions to problems that don't exist, and they go looking for a problem. UNIX have done the opposite and are solving an actual problem. So that's going to be quite an interesting one. And my favourite Unfortunately, I didn't choose this. I would have, however, chosen it. My favourite session title of the week: should I divorce my car? Having been divorced twice myself, I'm quite looking forward to seeing how you can actually divorce a car. Again, this is a session that is going to feature an Interreg NSR mobility hub. The lead speaker is Bram Neustraten, who's from the Transport Authority of Amsterdam. This is another session that Polis are involved in. You've also got Harriet de Haas from City of Rotterdam. You've got Eric van Dijk from the province of Utrecht. And you also have, Daniel Herrera, who is a project manager at Polis, and he's one of the parking working group managers. So that's going to be an interesting one. That it's the idea of divorcing yourself from the concept of car ownership, not just selling your car and buying another one. This is the idea of not having a car, not thinking about having a car, and it kind of relates back to the active travel session earlier in the week. And the last one I'm going to on Thursday, it's 3:30, is an IRF special session, Digitalisation for Effective Road Assets and Resources Management. That's in Intravic Theatre, Summit Theatre 1, and that is chaired by Susanna Zamatero from the IRF. I saw Susanna speak in, I think, 2001, 2002. She's very, very good. You've got Alexandros Kotsas from Salfo. You've got Anwar Benazouz from the Moroccan Highways, and David Bujiani from Movion. So that could be a really interesting one. IRF special sessions are always very, very good, very well attended. I'd get there early if you can. Make sure you get a seat. I'm going to stand at the back.
And other things I've picked up on that I think are quite interesting. I quite like the concept of Umovity, the Econolite and PTV company that has come together, and the idea of collecting the data from Econolite and then using it and using it very intelligently with PTV. So they've got a session on adaptive signal control, and also friends of Highways Voices are AccuSensus and Alexander Yannick from Australia of AccuSensus is talking about road safety enforcement systems. Now, they don't actually have any projects here in the Netherlands yet. They're doing a lot in the US, obviously, in Australia, and loads of stuff that we've covered on Highways News in the UK. But I think AccuSensus is an interesting company. What they do in the Netherlands is actually build the kit that then comes over to the UK to be used. So those are two more that I think are worth noticing on Thursday. But basically, the problem is you kind of throw a dart at the summit programme and you're going to find something worth listening to. Kevin, we will catch up tomorrow, one final time this week in Amsterdam, and we'll be talking about startups. But for now, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
And in the blink of an eye, that's day three sorted for you. One more show from the ride to come. So join me tomorrow for a look at Friday at Intertraffic, all thanks to the support of Swarco and AGD Systems.
Highways Voices from Intertraffic Amsterdam is brought to you thanks to Swarco and AGD Systems. Join us tomorrow for more from the event.